this surprise museum at the end of the night. So just to shock you all, the last couple of weeks I sang and read poems to do with the Ryan Report and with the Christian Brothers. So I decided because of that I would write a poem praising the monks and the brothers and the priests, just to fuck people up. So this is called The Good Monks. 'Tis easy then to praise the holy brothers who wrote the Book of Kells with virtue shining through, or who tended lepers while their limbs fell off with never an itch or never a scabrous thought. Of those I do not sing, but of those who in their time bring gifts of frankincense, myrrh and wine, those who plant the seeds of brimming cup so you and I and Crane Lane still can sup. Those monks who know their Johnny and their hops, they truly serve mankind and are one of us. Those who love the sinner and can show that sinners love the sin down here below. There is no better love on this vale of tears than love of the barley cup which truly cheers. God bless those hearty souls who with sport and frolic invite us to a reviving brew of Buckminster tonic, or those who know that the ruddy round road to hell is not paved with bottled farthings of Duvel, who cares the sot whether it is beer or wine that suitably Holy Spirit named that 69.
An absolute favorite. Okay, next up, we have the Lansdell. Billy Lansdell, who wins on the country exchange, is going to now stay home for us.
Hi. I'll just say a quick poem there by the great Limerick poet Michael Hartnett, and a poem called Death of an Irishwoman. I'll just say, hi Coventry, hi Cork. Great to be all here again. Ignorant in the sense she ate monotonous food and thought the world was flat, and pagan in the sense she knew the things that moved all night were neither dogs nor cats, but hobgoblins and dark-faced men. She nevertheless had fierce pride, but condemned in the end to a stone-cold kitchen, her frail hands clutched around the world she could not understand. I loved her from the day she died. She was a summer dance at the crossroads. She was a card game where a nose is broken. She was a song that nobody sings. She was a house ransacked by soldiers. She was a language that is seldom spoken. She was a child's purse full of useless things.
Thanks very much, Billy. And next up we have Joseph.
Good evening. I'm going to read a little excerpt from a ghost story called Aunt Emily's Secret, about two boys who've lost their parents in a car crash, and they think to stay with their Aunt Emily, and they have one of the boys has nightmares and flashbacks, and last week I described the nightmares, so it's a flashback. The flashbacks are different from the nightmares. Every detail remains eerily, stubbornly the same, unchanging, like something carved in stone. I am in the car. I hear, as though from a distance, the voices of my parents, their last groans of pain coming back to me from what used to be the front seat of the car. nothing but tangled wreckage now, where my body lies awkwardly twisted. I watch the forms of what used to be my mother and father through a kind of haze. Parts of their bodies are twitching every few seconds until finally, with the last few shudders, they become still. I hear the sound of police and ambulance sirens arriving in the distance. As soon as I hear them, I feel such relief. Tears flow down my cheeks because I know that the flashback is coming to an end. I know that soon after the machines that make the screeching sounds like a dentist's drill, the things that come through the body of the car, the sharp metal fingers tearing the doorway, that finally, thankfully, the sounds, all the sounds will be gone. And there will be peace at last, somewhere. And then I feel my body being carried from the car. Chapter 5. We get out at the train station in Sligo, and I set the suitcase down on the platform. The connection to Dunboyra has been delayed. We have 2 hours to kill. We sit on the platform seat, staring down the railway track, swinging our legs. I open the pack of sandwiches I made earlier and offer Darren one. No, he mutters. You have to eat, Darren. I'm not hungry. His manner has an edge to it now, worse than before. He hasn't been crying since I stood up and shouted at him on the train. That's something anyway. I look up and down the platform. There's a couple at the end of the platform who occasionally glance in our direction. Darren? I push the sandwich under his nose, waving it around, trying to tempt him. But he shakes his head again. Starving yourself isn't going to help, I say, glancing uneasily down the platform again as I bite into my sandwich. I miss them too, you know, but Darren's eyes settle on the couple down the platform now. After a moment, he cocks his head at an awkward angle to look at me, a strange disbelief in his eyes. It's not that simple, you know. Don't be such an idiot, Darren. We can't change the past. We've got to get on with life. Darren is standing up now, a puzzled look on his face, his eyes glued on the couple down the platform as if he recognizes them. His voice trails off and he sits down slowly. I see something I don't recognize in his eyes, open like a wound in a chasm, separating us. His lips quiver as if he's struggling to get a handle on something inside himself, like a vast stone, a boulder, a mountain, something too big for him to hold. I don't, he begins in a lost voice and then stops. Just before turning his head away, he gives me a desperate look that chills me to the bone. You don't seem to care, Jason. He raises both his arms in a gesture, a peculiar mixture of sadness and despair. You just don't realize. He stops. Don't realize? What are you talking about, Darren? I love him, but he says nothing. He keeps staring across the track. If we both bury ourselves in self-pity, we're not going to get anywhere, Darren. I point to the sandwiches which I left on the seat between us. There are other things we have to remember, you know, ordinary stuff like eating. Remember eating, Darren. If you don't eat, you die. Stare silent at me, a trace of mockery in his eyes. Fine, I say angrily, standing up. As I do so, I hear him muttering something. What did you say, Darren? It's nothing, he mumbled. No, I shout, it's not nothing. Why don't you tell me? Why don't you say what it is? But it's no use. The wave of grief has driven him under. His eyes slide away from me like a fish down the river. I can't help feeling he is keeping something.
Thank you very much. Okay, just a reminder, it is indeed a one poem limit. For fiction, could you keep it to about 2 minutes? We really literally have almost no time for everyone who's on the list. Next up, we have a woman who's come to us all the way from Missouri, and her name is Allison Lozano, and she's training to be a midwife, and this is a very special poem to have. I've been spending the last week and a half trying to understand the Irish and English accent. So if you cannot understand me, just ask me to repeat the word and I will try my best. This is the first time I've ever done something like this. So this poem is unnamed. So, luscious, safe, warming darkness, my own self-contained ocean that nourishes me, protects me, calms me, lulls me, lullaby, rocking, swaying, vibrations of voices penetrating my ears, but softly in my sea of luscious tranquility, my salty sea of darkness. Voices become louder, liquid vibrations surround me, rhythmically walls swell against me, my ocean is storming, raging, familiar voices are strained, moaning. I am rocking, twisting, extending, flexing, turning, rotating, light. I see a name that I very rudely missed earlier, and I do apologize. So please, next welcome, Mary Brennan.
I stumbled on a shadow down beside the lea. She was taller and far greater than I could ever be. She ran when I made chase, was truth ahead of me, untainted, unimpeded, her hollow entity. She led me to a church where I did say a prayer, thank you and a cry, in hope that he might hear. I marveled at the same vast, standing proudly there, transcending time to beauty, inanimately unaware. Shadow waited for me outside the grandest door. She came along beside me now and strode a whole up floor. I didn't feel so single with her company on the floor. We stood and watched the sunset, then Shadow was no more.
Oh, you've heard before. I'm sorry. I did very bad on me, but welcome back to me. Okay. So next up, please welcome Sue Cosgrave.
A few weeks ago, some of us were invited to write poems about the 3 days where we performed in Cork, and we were invited to rehearsals, and so I attended rehearsals for a play called Trolley, which is about two girls getting drunk in a car park, celebrating the birthday of one of them, who's 16, and a man appeared in the scene, and things start to unravel. It's called Trolley. No path is steep that leads to a friend, to Yale-like, and she is like a babe in a basket, Molly Moses, Stitch Seamus, in friendship, or so she thought, and this is where we see desire and stitch her. Desire for what does she even know? I'm stitched, 3, 3, 3, 16, exhalation, intake of breath. Desire liquefies all the declining in friendship. Friendship was so then, anything else. Makes you wonder, makes you ponder. Everyone's been there, done that, but it's huge, like, fuck, 16 had never been. There she is, scrolling through this epigraph, listening to an incantation that finds like egg, as strong and sweet as huge or fuel fucking gunk. She takes the existence of nothingness, bitter, bitter, sweet, the world is empty and score. She fingers its darkness blindly, saves her tips with ink of lies, and then she falls. For life's a quick tone, quick, quick, a quick shack, quick, quick. Who dare to keep score without his own versus pure absolute power in the two central old goals? Oppression is not just depression, devotion, but he's only wandering, so to motive, so there's not all that in the end, with even tainted friendship. Where is she now, toward the day after this year to now, unraveled as fish shattered shifted screws fallen off the painted graffiti wall, not incantation, not an epigraph of the listening, on the rasping tongue of the world by, the world self.
That involved art and poetry as well was really extraordinary, and it was cool to see people like Miriam in the back and Sue involved. It was great. Okay, so next up we have an OVO regular, James Harrington.
Thanks, Jen. Lexus. A lurking punch escapes the bunch. The furtive punch as Terence crunch. Sculpt novel lines, Rejig first find, observe the kind, beware sound minds. In catching crows and haughty pose, one always knows mismatching crows. Small stands the blocks, fresh from the stocks, in ginger fox, the thoughtful fox. The sound of chime reduced to mime, and work of rhyme defies all time. A gentle pace may cause a brace to find a place in time and space. To every nerve, it's not absurd to call a word from idle herd. Dyslexic game of sire and dame, by any name, is still the same. Thank you.
But we have time for just one more poet, Eugene. There's about 4 minutes left. And please welcome Eugene.
Passenger gift of Kripstrom, never a short day. Evening of endgames, countered by counter-blessings. The poet, James Kelly, for the Lewis. The Bishop of Derry and daughter, old friend. The marriage of Aoife, Princess of Leinster, relocated.